You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Folks, do you feel like everything these days is go, go, go? It's nonstop from work to friends to family and a million pressing issues. Sometimes you just need to take a play off and hit the reset button. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. Hey, it's that time of year in Minnesota again to get out on the lake, go to the cabin, sit back, watch some baseball. Coors Light is the perfect refreshment to chill during these summer months. There's only one beer out there that's made to chill. The mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue when your beer is cold, and that way you know it's time to chill. Hit that reset button with some mountain cold refreshment. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. It's crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Coors Light is the one you should choose when you need to unwind, when you want to hit the reset button. Reach for the beer that is made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado, and as always, celebrate. Hey everyone, anybody who listens to the show knows that Sam and I may not be scratch golfers, but we love to have a great time playing golf. And that's why we have partnered with Birdie Golf in Woodbury. Birdie Golf is hands down the best indoor golf experience you will ever have. There are 8 of the world's best golf simulators where you can sharpen your swing and, luckily for us, never lose a ball. But it's not just for hardcore golfers. Birdie Golf is for everyone. Bring the family, play arcade-style games while dining on great food in an upscale and comfortable environment. They have private bays for social distancing, a luxury lounge for private events, outdoor patio, and scratch kitchen. You'll want to try the whiskey or beer float flights and the best boneless wings in the metro. Make golf a night out or the place to hold parties, events, fundraisers, even your fantasy football draft. Check out Birdie Golf at 494 in Valley Creek in Woodbury, just a short drive from anywhere in the Twin Cities metro, and at birdiegolf.com, or you could call 651-998-2200 today. I'll see you there. Another episode of Purple Insider presented by Symbol, your stock market for sports, and by Scout Logistics. Matthew Collar here, Courtney Cronin, for an emergency podcast reacting to a big game-changing trade that, no, they got a depth offensive lineman for a sixth-round pick, Mason Cole. So, Courtney, your reaction to the Vikings trading for Mason Cole?
I tweeted this, and I will reiterate it on this podcast to start out, that at most, Mason Cole, a 2018 third-round pick, who you and I both had several times as a late day two, early day three pick in our mock drafts when we were like just at the beginning of discovering what mock draft season was and how great it is. But at most, Mason Cole should be Brett Jones, the new Brett Jones, because at this point it doesn't feel feasible or really reasonable for them to re-sign Brett Jones. At worst, Mason Cole should be the new Brett Jones. This is somebody who is terrible, one of the worst offensive linemen in the NFL among all starters at pass protection. It's not that he's some, you know, he had a 46.1 pass blocking grade last year. He had 23 pressures allowed. He allowed 2 sacks, and he started 14 games at center last year. It's not like somebody who came in off the bench and, you know, was a little bit here and there and just not somebody who, you know, this guy was a starting offensive lineman in the National Football League and very much one of the worst in terms of pass blocking and really not great at run blocking either. He's 6'5", 290. Like, he should have that. He is that prototype build, long, big, athletic guard that should fit in your zone scheme. But I don't think this is a great signing if you are really projecting that this guy is going to come in and compete for your left guard spot. And you have no reason to believe that that's not the case right now, right? Like, They have an opening at left guard. They also have an opening at left tackle. And last I checked, they didn't sign anybody, any big names in free agency after letting Riley Reiff walk. So all signs point to the draft if they want to address it there, but you cannot expect the offensive line play, the pass protection issues that they've had over the last few years to get better if you're making a signing like this and saying, like, boom, this is it. Let's go. It's not. They're not done by any stretch. It doesn't make a lot of sense. This is somebody, like, you're thinking, okay, they got Rodney – they, meaning Arizona, got Rodney Hudson in the trade last week. He's arguably, if not, you know, consensus best center in the league, bar none. And the guy has been playing for nearly a decade. He's awesome. Like, the writing was on the wall. They were probably going to cut this guy. Yet the Vikings just gave up their compensatory six-round pick. And I'm not saying that that's a game changer, but – they were probably going to cut this guy at some point, right? Like, and you just gave up a pick to get him. That's a little bizarre to me that, like, that, you know, that happened.
Well, I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that Zach Fulton signed elsewhere on the same day and how difficult it seems to be for them to chase people down to sign with the Vikings outside of their two big signings and Steven Weatherly. They've got a lot of positions to fill and not a lot of players coming here and a lot of guys flying off of the board that makes you think maybe they felt they had to trade somebody to get a guy in here. But as you point out, he was one of the lowest rated centers by PFF in the entire NFL last year. And you know what it kind of feels like? I don't know if you've ever known anyone in your life like this, but somebody who kind of makes up their own science, someone who says, like, hey, you know why it's going to rain tomorrow? Because it smells like it. And you're like, well, I guess it might rain tomorrow, but it's not because it smells like it. And with the Vikings, it's like, yeah, you know, guys, all the science and the data says that these moves you're making on the offensive line are not going to work out. And they're like, no, trust me, we see something. You're like, do you, though? And the results have not been friendly to them in recent years. And with this, as soon as you say not very good at pass blocking, I'm sure everyone just wants to, if they're in their cars, drive off the road, because it seems to be like they're going out of their way to get people who are not good at pass blocking. And that is a very curious approach to offensive line, but that does seem to be the way they're doing it. And here's a weird thing to say, but Mason Cole, even if he's the Brett Jones of next year, is a downgrade for Brett Jones because Brett Jones was actually good at pass blocking. So no, it's not a reason to freak out over this, but it would be reason to say, like, what exactly is the point here of getting a guy? The point can't be to put him at center and move Garrett Bradbury, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. That would be no. No. No, absolutely not.
Are you sure?
Well, in my brain, I'm going back to the press conference we had with Rick Spielman at the beginning of the month where he was naming, you know, he's asked about Ezra Cleveland. It's like, I don't know where he's going to play because some guys might be here, some guys won't. And he's talking about the pieces that feel like franchise pieces for this team, that it's a Cleveland, it's an O'Neal, it's a Bradbury. Like, I don't think they're going to move Garrett Bradbury. I really don't. And yeah, I know he's short. He's, you know, undersized for the position. He's had his own issues at that rate. But why would you upgrade? He had a decent year last year, all things considered, coming off his rookie season. I think he took far bigger step. I mean, heck, he was a better rated lineman, if you're just looking at statistically speaking in pass protection, than what you have here with this guy, Mason Cole. I think that would be a terrible move if that is being entertained. But to me, I just don't see it like that, because how can you sell that move when you have two other openings? You're going to all of a sudden then move Garrett Bradbury to play left guard? That doesn't seem smart.
No, and it doesn't. And I was more of taking shots at what they might think and not what I think, because it's almost like you have to predict the unpredictable when it comes to the Vikings and the offensive
the
line.
Stuff that doesn't, the nonsensical stuff that comes with this group, like, of let's play guys out of position, let's reach for somebody that we, you know, probably don't need to do that for when this guy was probably going to be cut. Let's not address it head on. To me, they overcomplicate the issue of the offensive line. And I do feel for Vikings fans in that sense, and anybody who supports this team, because it just kind of feels like they're the Giants with edge rushers. There's certain teams who always have the same issue that they never seem to address, even though they may kind of do a roundabout way of getting to it. The logical thing to do, and Mel Kiper projected this in his mock draft, is if you want to like be able to find somebody to play left tackle that you won't have to worry about, like literally just like draft the guy, put him at left tackle, and then like 10 years later, like call it when he retires, then you trade up to try to get Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater, because neither of those guys are going to be there at 14 when you're drafting. But you can't ever expect, especially when it comes to this position, just given the track record, they've taken two linemen in the first round since Rick Spielman became general manager and started calling all the shots in 2012. They've never traded up on draft day in the first round since he became general manager. They trade back a bunch, but they haven't traded up. So it just kind of leads you to believe that the easy button just doesn't apply to them when it comes to the offensive line. Sometimes I do think that they unnecessarily convolute and complicate things when the answer to most people, and I know that they'll claim that they know more than everybody else because they're football people and they're grinding tape and all of that, but the answers that point themselves out to people who aren't making these decisions, but who are also in the know and kind of get how this business works, that sometimes feels like they don't go that route. And whether it's out of spite, whether it's to prove a point, whether it's to do God knows what, whether they have other priorities, sometimes you need to like alter your priorities if you want to keep your job and try to win football games.
It's like going out of their way to look at the very bottom of the PFF grades and say, we'll get these guys to prove PFF wrong. I mean, it's almost like that because they've done it so often. And the moving of positions, the taking guys where the numbers clearly point to them not being good enough to handle pass protection, like these are things that are just repeated mistakes that they make. And I agree that there is a way to make some of this right, which would be to draft the best offensive lineman you can get, whether that is trading up for Penei Sewell or whether it's even just taking someone like Christian Darrisaw at number 14. It would give you a bit of a domino effect to where Ezra Cleveland could stay at guard and grow from there. Brian O'Neill is locked into right tackle where he belongs. Garrett Bradbury could stay at center, and then you fill in that one position, and I guess you would say hopefully without using Mason Cole as a starter, but it just, we said this same thing though about Dakota Dozier, where all last offseason we went, well, I know the one thing they won't do is start Dakota Dozier for 16 games because the guy is a career backup. And yet here we are, they started Dakota Dozier for 16 games. And I wouldn't even be super stunned if they brought him back. If they said, oh, you know what? We're going to have this competition between Dakota Dozier and Mason Cole to see who wins at left guard. And then everybody just throws their hands up and says, why are you doing the same thing over and over again and making the same mistakes? And if you're Kirk Cousins, you got to be like, really? Can someday we just get someone who can block from the interior? But at very least, if they were to draft a left tackle, that would solve the problems. But then we'd be asking, all right, now who's rushing the passer again? Are you guys set with Stephen Weatherly starting? Because that'll be your deal if you draft an offensive lineman in the first round, and then we're talking about the game of whack-a-mole again.
And, who's going to play safety? Like, if they don't stay put at 14, I think it's more realistic to think it's because they're trading back to try to get some safety that's, whoever would be there in the first round. Because, they were in on Kareem Jackson this week, and they lost out to him to Denver. And that's, there are a lot of safeties. I was taking a look at the second wave class. There's a lot of guys signing these one-year deals, and you can go after somebody that's still out there to play free safety opposite Harrison Smith. I mean, heck, seeing Andrew Sandejo's name floating around a little bit, would it surprise me if they do that? Absolutely not. But, like, there's quite a few out there that they could absolutely get away with doing. I mean, the Houston Michael Thomas is still on the free agent market. Tashawn Gibson wasn't re-signed by Chicago. Justin Simmons is out there. Trey Boston. Like, there's a lot of things they could do. And then that would free you up at 14 to not have to even think about trading back to try to get a defensive asset or, getting a late first round safety and then acquiring a pick or two along the way. Like, I just don't think that that's realistic. But you know, the way that I look at this is that it just feels like they keep missing the mark and overcomplicate things. Be like, oh, well, we don't want to, like, reach for Elijah Vera Tucker at 14 if they think that's a reach. I know that some people don't. He's the 10th highest graded player on Mel Kiper's board, so I don't think that's a reach. But they overcomplicate things like that. And then they end up somewhere late in the first round with somebody who just doesn't fit the need that you really want. And what are you going to do? Like, honestly, you can't gamble this year. Like, yeah, there's a lot of value in round two with tackles. Those aren't guys who are going to be able to start right away, unless you're going to try to complicate this stuff even further by moving Ezra Cleveland to left tackle and taking one of these left tackles in the draft and playing them at guard, some nonsense like that. It wouldn't make any sense to anyone. I don't understand why they've done that so routinely, moving guys out of position, when the answer can be so clear. And yeah, there are a lot of busts out there. I mean, I don't think Tennessee was thinking that Isaiah Wilson was going to, you know, fly off the handle the way he did. And he's a bust in other ways, more than just bad play. But, like, you always run that risk with taking a first-round lineman that it won't pan out. They learned that with Matt Khalil. But, you know, I think you have to shoot for what your biggest need is and stop trying to, like, you know, come off as that you know something more than anybody else, when if you don't address your biggest need now and it hurts you again this year, you're a 7-10 team. And you're probably, you know, a lot of people could be looking for jobs next year.
Hey, everybody, want to tell you about our friends at SimBull. SimBull is a new sports marketplace where you can trade shares of professional teams like stocks. So as we jump fully into free agency season, you're going to want to get in on teams now before your team's stock rises. Go to SimBull.app, that is SimBull.app. Sign up using the promo code PURPLE and get a $10 deposit bonus if you're a first-time user, and then you are off and rolling. Here's how it works. You buy stocks of your teams, and when your team wins, you earn cash payouts that are instantly deposited. If you sign up for SimBull, you also get updates emailed to you directly with the trends on which teams are on the rise. So check out SimBull.app or follow them on Twitter at SimBull Exchange, and check out the marketplace for sports today. Folks, the football offseason is off and rolling, and SodaStick has you covered with Minnesota sports-themed gear. Some of my favorite football designs that you have to check out include the Chuck Foreman Spin Doctor gear. You can commemorate Randy Moss's disgusting act on a shirt or a hoodie. And if you're old school, check out the Purple People Eaters design as well. Go to SodaStick.com and check them all out. If you use the promo code PURPLEINSIDER, you can get free shipping on all your Minnesota sports-inspired gear. All of their apparel is screen printed here in Minnesota on super soft, super comfy shirts and hoodies. You will love it. Plus, keep your eyes and ears out for our giveaways going on this show as well on social media. Follow them at SodaStick Co. on Twitter and at SodaStick.com for your original Minnesota sports inspired goods. Code Purple Insider for free shipping. You know, the point that you make about Matt Khalil is an interesting one, that his name comes up, because when we talk about whether the team just has an issue with evaluating these players, they offered Matt Khalil a big contract before signing Riley Reiff, and Khalil turned them down to go to Carolina. Reiff was fine. Can you imagine Matt Khalil there? You might not get to the NFC Championship if they had re-signed Matt Khalil. That deal went mega bust for Carolina, like, immediately, and this team was ready to bring him back after having him in their building, seeing his injury issues, seeing his decline in play, and yet they still said, sure, this is fine. And it's just this pattern of behavior year after year where they can't seem to figure out how to create an offensive line that can block for anybody. And some of it is certainly the quarterback, but they also don't play to the quarterback's weaknesses either. And you mentioned Vera Tucker. I'm in on Vera Tucker because he played guard and tackle in college.
And he's a guard in the NFL. Like, I think that solves an issue. I mean, you still need to probably go get a left tackle, but you solve a big problem, because you can't fix the offensive line and your issues by doing it on the cheap. I just don't believe that. There's a reason these guys are cheap. It's not like the market's so overloaded now with guards that you can, you know, I just don't understand this one at all. Like, they didn't go after you know, they haven't signed anybody on the free agent market to play offensive line. Like, that's the thing that doesn't make a whole ton of sense to me. Like, they traded a six-round pick for this when – I know you talked about Zach Fulton going to the Giants today on that one-year deal, but – you know, Trey Turner's still out there, Nick Easton, Lane Taylor, James Carpenter, J.R. Sweezy. Like, there are a lot of names. Could I see them doing that as well? Signing one? Probably. I don't know. I just kind of get, like, weirded out by this whole thing because sometimes it just feels like I'm taking crazy pills because I just don't understand things. And this is one that just – it almost feels – I feel like if you would have waited a little bit longer, this guy probably would have been waived. And you wouldn't have had to give up a draft pick for him.
When all
like Brent Jones was probably going to get waived in 2018. Let's be honest. That happened right before cutdown day. And they traded a pick for him. I don't understand that.
Well, and Brent Jones has just much better numbers than Mason Cole.
Yeah.
And that's where the taking crazy pills is. When you look at the PFF grades versus guys who get paid and guys who are signing for the biggest contracts in the offensive line and free agency, it is a very close match. I mean, usually it matches up to how the league feels about people to PFF. All the teams work with PFF. So I think it's a credible source to go look and say, how did this guy play? They're looking at every snap. Even if we were grinding some tape, looking at every snap of the guy's whole career would take a really long time, but that's what they do. So when you're looking at that and you're saying, okay, this is what they came up with and their numbers have credibility. And yet it seems like the Vikings say, no, they don't. They're like, well, the whole rest of the league is kind of getting this right with which guys to pay. Like Trent Williams was the highest graded tackle, and he got the most money. Like those things generally match up, and yet here they are spending an asset on a guy with just bad numbers. Now, it's always possible that he would be a better scheme fit if they run, which I believe they do, a different scheme than Arizona, that maybe his numbers could increase. But when they're at the very bottom of the league, do we really think they're going far up?
No.
Probably not. So, you know, again, if it's depth, it's okay, but then you still have so much work to do in order to put together a reasonable offensive line that you're going to have to prove it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't – right now, at this point of March, I don't have any issue with them bringing him in and saying, hey, he'll compete for a left guard spot, but don't have – that's fine, like, because – heck, like, what were they saying about – I'm trying to think about Brett Jones a couple years ago when they first got him in August of 2018 from the Giants. Like, I don't remember exactly how they sold it, but, like, I think it's fair to say, hey, yeah, he'll come in. He'll compete for one of the we need a guard. He's going to compete at guard. Sure, if you just traded a pick for this guy, I would expect that, but it should not preclude you from continuing to try to sign somebody else, bringing in one or two veterans and being aggressive in the draft. I think that you have to. Like, honestly, they're going to miss the mark if they go defensive line in the first round. Like, I don't understand. That would be a really short-sighted move when your biggest hole right now, like, you address defense in free agency. Mike Zimmer can't have the keys to the car in the draft, in my opinion, because if you keep thinking that everything's fine on offense when you don't have a left tackle right now and your offensive line is a mess, you can't keep addressing defense and expecting that your defense is going to be able to overcompensate that much when they're already still trying to work their way back from where they were, you know, a year ago.
Okay, so I have something different in terms of a direction from ranting about the offensive line. Are you ready?
Sure.
I want you to pick the Vikings schedule with 17 games.
Got it.
Okay, so your friend Mike Clay at ESPN helped out big time here because I was going to make up my own schedule, but he made them up. And so he has the Vikings right now, long way to go here, but right now having the 16th most challenging schedule in the NFL, so mid-pack. So here's what we know, that Kirk Cousins will be the quarterback, that the head coach and general manager aren't going anywhere, that the defense is added to free agents. We still don't know about whether Danielle Hunter's coming back. We still don't know who's playing offensive line exactly. So there's lots of other times we could also pick the schedule this offseason when we have more answers. But I want to get your first baseline post-signings and Mason Cole trade. So let's just begin. Vikings at Detroit to start the season, and maybe hopefully they protect their ankles and kneecaps and everything for being bitten.
I will go ahead and say that that is a win to open up the year.
Okay, so on to Pittsburgh, back at home with hopefully fans in the stands, a raucous crowd for Ben Roethlisberger to come to U.S. Bank Stadium and play the Vikings.
That will be a loss.
Okay, 1-1. They go out to San Francisco for week 3. Now, again, let me just stop and say this is a made-up schedule by Mike Clay of ESPN. This is not the Vikings schedule. They released that after the draft. So they are 1-1 going out to play Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers.
I think just given some of the underlying question marks still with that team and what they did and have not done in free agency, could be a toss-up. I will go ahead, though, because I'm looking at the schedule now in front of me, too, that Mike Clay, his mock schedule he put together. I will go ahead and actually say that they're going to win this game in San Francisco.
Okay, so off to a good start. They are 2-1, and Kyle Shanahan is in tears because Kirk Cousins has beaten him, and he's always wanted Kirk Cousins. At Chicago, Soldier Field, will you ever pick the Vikings to win at Soldier Field?
No, because there's fans back this time, so I'm not assuming all things go according to plan. No, absolutely not.
2-2. The Green Bay Packers, who I want to dive into a little bit more next week since they have done absolutely nothing in free agency. Yeah. The Vikings mock Week 5 matchup as a 2-2 team against Green Bay at U.S. Bank Stadium.
They will win that game. It'll be their first home win of the season.
Okay, so Aaron Rodgers comes to U.S. Bank Stadium where he's not had a lot of luck except last year and loses 3-2. Now they have played Seattle, and an unhappy Russell Wilson has taken the flight for some reason to U.S. Bank Stadium. I thought they were only allowed to play Seattle in Seattle.
I know. No, that's a loss. And I always, like, I was looking at that. I'm like, wait a second. Are we sure that this game's actually at U.S. Bank Stadium?
Right. I didn't know the schedule makers were allowed to do it. So they get a bye week here. They are 3-3 at the bye week. And I would say after that loss to Seattle, there's pressure. Pressure is building. And they go to Baltimore to face Lamar Jackson with outweighs to pressure Lamar Jackson presently.
Yeah, it's the Yannick Ngakoue revenge game. That is a loss.
Oh, that would have to be Vegas because he's in Vegas.
I mean, but
though. Oh, but
I know
the trade,
that.
Sure.
So the trade, like,
oh, this is Baltimore, the Corey Vedvik then.
Fine, the Corey Vedvik. Who is the other one that they got the wool pulled over them on? It was Yannick Ngakoue.
Okay, so they used the Vedvik trade to get Calais Campbell. That would be how that worked out. Yes. So we got
We'll still call that the Yannick Ngakoue revenge game, even though he's not on the team anymore.
I'm totally fine with that. So that is 3-4. They lost that game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 3-4. Los Angeles Rams of Los Angeles come to play the Vikings at U.S. Bank Stadium with Matt Stafford making his return to a place where he once was sacked 10 times.
Yeah, God, I remember that game. I think that they will win this game.
Okay, I also think that.
It's at home. They don't lose a lot at home. And, like, you know, if your defense is improved, like, by that point, then sure.
The only the only counterpoint I have is just that Aaron Donald would be.
Yes, of course. And if what's his name, Mason Cole, is your starting left guard, you're going to have a lot of problems. Word to Tom Compton. Ask him how that was last time he played the Rams.
I think he graded like an 8.
Against Aaron Donald that day. That was a rough day for him.
Well, he's not the only one. Cleveland comes here. Kevin Stefanski revenge game.
Stefanski win.
Okay. They are.
It was good. They're, you know, signing pass rushers. They're doing what you need to do to, you know, compete in free agency.
Since you use one Zoolander drop, I will say that they are so hot right now, Cleveland, in free agency. Some really good signings. Out to Arizona for the Mason Cole revenge game. And Patrick Peterson, I'm sure, will be my
Patrick Peterson revenge game. What do I have them at right now?
4-5.
4-5. This will be a loss.
Ooh,
Arizona's good. They've got a lot of weapons. Are those corners going to be that much improved if you don't have the pass rush is still kind of where it's at? I don't know yet, but I'll go ahead and mark that down as a loss.
So they are 4-6. Kyler Murray runs all over them. Now Chicago comes to play the Vikings. This would be one where there's going to be heaps of pressure and hype about a 4-6 team fighting for the playoff position.
Yeah. In week 12, that'll be a win for them.
All right, on to 5 and 6. So they split with Andy Dalton. I just wrote a column about how you're not allowed to make fun of Andy Dalton if you're a Vikings fan because Chad Hutchinson once beat you. At Cincinnati Bengals, presumably Joe Burrow is back. Riley Reiff revenge game.
Right. Yeah, that'll be a win for them. So many good revenge game storylines. I know that some people will be writing those. That'll be great.
6 and 6. So they've gotten back on the – this would be their Carolina and Jacksonville wins from last year. They're up to 6 and 6, and they play Dallas at home, who they lost to last year.
And they will lose again
Dak
this
Prescott
year.
Back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dallas should be good
really
this
good.
Year. I don't trust Mike McCarthy, but they should be good. So that makes them 6 and 7 going down the stretch. They will face Detroit at home in week 15 in our mock schedule for Mike Clay of ESPN.
I know where I want this to go, and I know that I probably have already like screwed myself over here. I will go ahead and say that this Detroit team is a win.
Wow. This is a disappointment. This is the one. Like, there's one every year where we go, what? How did you lose that game? This would be the one.
Well, they lost to Detroit, you know, or I didn't have them lose to Detroit in my mock schedule at all yet. There is a disappointment coming, but I think that they will – actually, you know, I'm going to change my pick because I'm looking and seeing, like, what he has coming down the stretch here. They'll lose to Detroit at home. They will lose to Detroit at home coming off the Dallas loss. That's
6 and 8 then. 6 and 8. And they need to win out probably to make the playoffs. They go to Carolina, who we'll assume is not traded for Deshaun Watson at this point.
Yeah. I will say they will win at Carolina.
I would agree with you. Though the last time we went to Carolina, things got weird. Things got very weird. At Green Bay, week 17, and they are a 7 and 8 football team.
They're now 7 and 9 because they're going to lose at Green Bay.
And out to the Chargers to play in a real stadium. Again, the last time we went there, that was the coldest I have ever been. I was freezing.
I will never go to cover a football game at a soccer stadium ever again. I've ruled it out of my life.
Thought there would be either a press box that was a real press box, or B,
indoors,
right? Or B, warm, because it's Los Angeles. The night before the game, I was playing basketball on at a local park in Los Angeles, and it was amazing. And then we go there, and it was super windy, and it was like 58 degrees. It's freezing.
It was a 1 o'clock game too, if I remember correctly. Well, yeah, of course it's LA, but the game was deceptively cold.
So do they win to go to 8 and 9?
No, they don't. They are going to lose that game. So they're going to finish 7 and 10.
7 and 10.
Because I remember when I was projecting the schedule initially, and I'm going to keep saying 7 and 9, even though there's the extra game added, because until they actually add it, until the 17-game schedule becomes official, I'll always forget. But, you know, the way that I look at this is the team has not done anything for me in free agency that really tells me they're that much improved. Like, there's so many question marks with their deep. Like, there's not like one signing that's like, that is an immediate upgrade. There's no questions surrounding it. It's good to go. Don't touch it. Like, we don't know if Dalvin Tomlinson is going to be a great three technique. We really don't. We don't know how much the interior pass rush is going to improve. We don't know about like the edge rusher's position either. Like, is Stephen Weatherly going to have the type of season he had last year in Carolina where he went 0 for like every important stat, like on his stat line? Like, you know, you hope not, because you just let a Fadi Odenebo walk. So you hope that, you know, you hope that they looked at that being like, yeah, he's a better pass rusher than Odenebo was, especially now that you might be having him play like a considerable role there. But, you know, Patrick Peterson, like, you know, I know that we talk about him as one of the greatest cornerbacks of this era, and he was, but like, he's had a rough last two seasons. You know, maybe they play more zone. Maybe they do other things to adjust to what they need back there. Like, certainly he's going to help the others come along. But, like, if you're anticipating that he's going to – there's no such thing, I think, as a lockdown corner anymore. I really don't believe that. Not in today's game, not with the way that it's called and officiated for those types of players and just how things favor the offense. It's just not the case. So – there's so many questions that I don't even know if Nick Vigil's a real person because we didn't talk to him. But, like, I don't know if this team is all that much improved. Nothing to me screams, like, massive improvement yet. until, honestly, until they, like, don't overcomplicate something, like the offensive line. Like, just draft, like, just make the easy pick. It doesn't make sense to me if you're not doing that.
Okay, let me ask you this then. What could they do to swing your record the other way from 7-10, which I think...
To 10-7?
Yes.
Or at least like one or two more wins?
At least one or two more, or at least to get them in the playoffs, because I don't think, although I have no idea how records are going to work when it's 17 games in the playoffs, but I don't think 7-10 will do it in the NFC. So let's say two more wins in order to do it to get them into the playoffs. What would they have to do between now and then?
Draft your left tackle. Don't overcomplicate that. To me, it's the easiest way to solve it. Do that. Get a number three receiver and one more edge rusher.
That's worth two wins?
Probably, in my mind at least. I would have probably have had, like, I mean, because what else can you do? Like, you still have, you have the space in free agency to go sign a safety. Like, I think that they should do that within the next week or so. Like, get somebody in there to play free opposite Harrison Smith. Don't overcomplicate that by trying the whole, you know, Patrick Peterson idea that he's going to move to safety. Like, he told us the other day that that's not really the plan, that he plans to play cornerback. And I agree. Like, you don't pay the guy $10 million on a one-year contract to play safety when, he, you know, the cornerback market was what it was. So I it's probably, like, I mean, it's kind of tough to say, like, all those moves would give you two more wins, but I just don't think that this team has, they didn't do anything that blew me away in free agency at all. Like, Dalvin Tomlinson's probably a very good player, but again, he's going to be playing out of position here. Patrick Peterson is kind of past his prime, but can he regain some form? I'm not saying it's unrealistic to think, like, oh, he's going to go back to the form that he was when he was an eight-time Pro Bowler. Like, that's like saying, like, when Richard Sherman was moving around, like, oh, he's going to be the same player he was in Seattle with, like, the Legion of Boom. Like, no, guys age. Guys get older. Guys have to change who they are to adapt to the game. Like, that's probably what you're going to have to see from Patrick Peterson. So, like, I don't know. So, I mean, I just don't think that they did enough, or at least the right moves that are going to...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Truly upgrade this roster.
Hey everyone, I want to tell you about our friends at Scout Logistics, and I really do mean it when I say friends. They are fans of Purple Insider over at Scout Logistics, and since they reached out wanting to support this show, I want to tell you about what they do. Scout Logistics is just-in-time transportation for full tractor-trailer loads, and if you're wondering what that means exactly, well, if you own or work for a company that needs shipping solutions, they are the preferred carrier of Fortune 500 companies across North America, and we have quite a few of those in Minnesota, right? They can ship perishable, non-perishable, FTL or LTL, and they have on-time delivery rate of over 99%. So, if you're like them and you enjoy the show and you have shipping needs, check out scoutlogistics.com or call 855-217-2688 extension 232 to connect with them directly to find out how Scout Logistics can minimize risk and overperform and go the extra mile for your company.
Yeah, I mean, trying to figure out relative to also your schedule, which I don't think the schedule was that hard last year. And I know Mike Clay has it mid-pack, but I think it might be harder than it has been the last 2 years for this team. And we'll have to, you know, dive deep on kind of the quarterback matchups, because those often tell us what the team's record is going to be. Which games are on prime time is another thing. I don't expect a whole lot this year, actually, on prime time. So you're right. But when you look at those signings on paper, it's hard to squeeze out versus what you've lost a lot more wins. And that means to me the next move or the next two moves that are not Mason Cole are going to be the difference makers for how much you are going to swing this. I mean, if they get a legitimate playmaking safety, that's okay, but that's kind of been Anthony Harris. And, you know, can you improve on Anthony Harris from last year? Sure, but he was middle of the pack. So unless you're getting a star, probably not. I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to talk yourself into it. The only thing that I think people are kind of gripping onto with the death grip is Danielle Hunter coming back.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
So if I tell you that Danielle Hunter is 100% to come back, does that change anything? Or are you staying with that? Were you factoring Hunter in?
Yeah, I was factoring that in pretty much like throughout most of this. And maybe it's when you truly see like what he's able to do, once they figure out like who's playing opposite him, how that looks, maybe that'll swing my opinion when we redo this at multiple points throughout the year. But right now you can't tell me that it's going to be much different than 7-10. It doesn't feel like it.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it just, yeah, you're right. You have to work your way into it with the state of the offensive line, the state of the pass rush, the question marks that still exist in the secondary for right now. But one thing that is good is that last year, I think you swung all over the place through the offseason for where they were going to finish with some of your picks. I think we got maybe as low as like 5-11. At some point when they were bad in the season and in the off season, I think there was maybe an 11-5 mixed in there. So, you know, it's always changing, and that's why we have emergency podcasts. But for today, this probably wasn't worth an emergency podcast. We were going to do this anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, but the Mason Cole thing like made it worthy of the emergency pod status, I think.
It did. But welcome, Mason Cole, where everyone knows your PFF grade, and it's not great. So, all right, Courtney, well, this is fun, and I'm sorry to everyone who is excited about Mason Cole, and we'll look for the next move that will be interesting. What do you think it's going to be?
Safety?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think by next week we've got a safety.
By next week there's a safety because you just cannot roll the dice on that with a draft pick because there's so many other needs. And talk about reaching, you know, this team – you can talk about what they could have done with Antoine Winfield Jr. last year. That's all in the past. I just feel like they're not going to try to swing and miss in the draft, that you just try to settle that position now with a free agent.
You know, the next time we talk, though, free agency will be pretty settled down, and I think it's time to go all in on draft season.
I think it's time to wake up draft sim.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Courtney, our draft scout, will return, and I'm working on something for that, so I won't spoil it now. But thank you for your time, as always, Courtney, and we will talk soon.